Hello, Shady Gang.
Hello, Shady Gang.
Hello, Shady Gang.
Hello, Shady Gang.
Tarek here.
Shoppy Charlie here.
Prunk Chocolate here.
Lando here.
And I want to personally invite you to our
first live and in-person event
on April 20th, 2024.
Live and Lit Chicago will be our chance to connect with you in a truly unique,
one-of-a-kind experience. We will be hosting a three-course breakfast,
a watch party for Man City vs. Tottenham,
and more to be announced later. You can purchase your tickets,
pre-order merch, or simply donate to our event on GiveButter.
Tap the link in the post or scan the QR code on the screen.
We want to thank our friends at FanFest Live for being our official event sponsor. Damn, they do a great job.
I look forward to getting live and lit with you in April.
You know the vibes.
Shady Gang.
Shady Gang.
Shady Gang.
I hate the most is when you don't want the ball. I hate it. You have permission to make a mistake. You have permission to lose. You have permission.
And that's when we get big.
Yeah, I'm a genius.
Attack everyone and send everyone.
I think we're forgetting the most important thing. We're forgetting about focusing just on ourselves.
You can do better. You need to take the next step, and there's no better place than taking the next step here.
Show ourselves out there how much we want to win it again.
We win four of the last five Premier League, guys. Four of the last five Premier League. Are we going to do it again?
Don't ask me again about doubles, triples, quadruples, fifth-tuples, sixth-tuples, and seven-tuples. So.
I hate the most is when you don't want the ball.
Don't do it. You heard the man. Don't do it. Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody into Shades of Blue. We making our art over here. We're going to capitalize that A. We are the United States' most comprehensive Manchester City podcast, covering both Manchester City Football Club and Manchester City Women Football Club. Spanning both sides of the Mason-Dixon line. You might see a little bit of squad rotation, you know, like it happens. I am Tom Baum. I am joined today, this evening, by Sharpie Charlie, joined by a good friend, Lando. Gentlemen, how are we feeling?
Feeling good, man. It's been a very, very, very productive weekend if you wear Sky Blue. Shouts to the spot rotation. It's February, right? So we got the midweek matches, you know, three matches in 7 days. You got to spread out. You know, Crunk held it down Friday, had some things happen. So now we back here on Monday, getting it busy. You know, Tarek's doing Tarek things as a dad and, you know, person getting his bread. So we here for you. Lando, how you been feeling, man?
I'm here. Vibing to the great content that's been out. The Breaking Bread series is heating up. We're getting out there to some different levels of engagement. I'm loving every bit of it. And before we continue, let's just get it cracking right now. Like, subscribe, rate, review, get at us. Comment. You like it, you hate it, let us know. But put that 5 stars, because we all know if you ain't doing it, what's the point?
Also want to throw out there, you know, be on the lookout, you know, SOB Media coming to a city near you.
Ooh,
I believe Chicago is happening April 20th, 420. It's a holiday for me. I don't know about for you.
Hey.
Tap in with us if you're in the Midwest. I'll be coming in. The whole team will be there. You also got some stops coming your way in KC. You got stops in DC. You know, I might pop up myself just in New York City to say what up to the Sky Blue homies. So, you know, just be on the lookout.
Yeah, you know, we are making moves. Again, we are capitalizing that A in art. Be on the lookout for us making those moves. So I believe since our last recording, 9 points across the men and the women. Yeah, we love it. We love it.
Whole that's lot big. Of money.
That's big.
Yeah, that's huge. So we're going to go ahead and kick this off real quick. Oh, well, you know how it goes. Manchester City Women FC, we affectionately call the baby blue baddies because the definition of a baddie is a woman that handles business and stands on it. And I cannot think of a more apt description for what happened yesterday at the Joy Stadium than what our two wingers did was standing on business and being baddies. So let's go ahead and start with this lineup real quick. So lineup actually was, I think, Charlie, you said it, like, this is the first choice lineup. You said it in the pre-match show. This is going to be the first choice lineup against any larger squad, probably against Arsenal, in against Chelsea, based off of what we currently know. So we had Keating in goal, left to right in defense, Leila Wahabi, Alex Greenwood, Laya Alexandri, Kirsten Kasparai. The midfield, we had Yui Hasegawa, Laura Coombs, Philippa Engeldahl. Dynamic front three, Bunny Shaw, Lauren Hemp, and Chloe Kelly. I'm not going to lie to you, fellas. The first half was rough to watch. I think we knew that Leicester was going to come out in a low block, but I think that the way that they kind of like did a little bit of a press, like a counter press sort of thing, I'm not sure that we were completely ready for it. And it was obvious that they wanted to make sure that nothing was coming in from the wings. They wanted to funnel everything through the middle, and they were going to make Philippa Engeldahl and Laura Coombs playmake. They did not have the response that you were hoping for. I think both of them had a couple of shots on goal. Both of them were right at the keeper. I think Bunny missed one right at the keeper. I believe that Engeldahl had one. Coombs had many, which was...
Coombs. I'm sorry, Tom. Hold on. Coombs. It was tough to watch. You just see that there are levels to this, as the poet once said. And you just know somebody else is supposed to be there in that spot taking those chances, and it hurts. Gave her best. But I think we're going to get into it. But I feel like that quote, necessity is the mother of invention, it really happened this match. And Gareth had to get in his deep in his bag.
Speaking of Gareth, let's hear what the gaffer had to say at halftime to the squad.
I was quite calm. I just said, look, you know, when we're good, we're good. And when we're not, we're just like, I said, we're a bit late on our pressing. So we're a little bit late without the ball. And I said, we're just a little bit not really killing them in our build-up play. And that was just down to distances and the players playing a little bit wider. We were bringing inside full-back when we didn't need to, because you could see they were 4-2-3-1 really clear. And we needed to be able to get Alex or Laya stepping in to that halfway line. And that's when we normally get some really good stuff at the top end of the pitch. So, yeah, it wasn't anything I said dramatic at halftime. I was quite calm. I just said, look, you know, when we're good, we're good. And when we're not, we're just like, I said, we're a bit late on our pressing. So we're a little bit late without the ball.
Sorry about that loop, guys. Just, you know, we're all like, but yes, like everything was a bit late. Everything was just kind of a bit off. And you kind of knew that changes were going to happen, but you didn't necessarily know what those changes were. Come out the second half, you kind of see more of the same, and you just kind of get frustrated, and you're like, what is Gareth going to do to really change this match? And then in the 63rd minute, he takes Philippa Engeldahl off and brings in Jess Park. And bring up the Shaq quote, I'm sorry, I was unfamiliar with your game, Jess, because I didn't know that you could play in the midfield and play make the way that you did, because it was like an instant spark. Like, everything just started to click more once she got on the pitch. And she was even the one that released Laura Coombs for the last shot in the 75th minute, right before she got subbed off. That was rough to watch. But then, I say this all the time, same city, same passion. And I think what you saw in the last 15, 20 minutes of the match was what you saw the men do against Burnley, in that you brought in Mary Fowler for Laura Coombs. So at this point, you essentially have two playmaking midfielders in Jess Park and Mary Fowler. And then you have your front three. You have your wingers hold the width, or they can interplay with Jess Park. And then you have Bunny up top. So what Man City men did against Burnley is kind of what we did in the last 20 minutes against Leicester. And so you just had that front attacking five, and neither Mary Fowler or Jess Park was being asked to get box to box on that. And then as a result, you were able to put Mary out wide and let Chloe cut inside, or let Lauren Hemp cut inside, and vice versa with Jess Park on the other side. And they were both popping up in really, really good spaces. And that allowed a player like Bunny Shaw to drift outside. So when she drifts outside to bring the defense with her, she puts a cross into the box that I am still shocked. A scorpion kick while you are that's some Patrick Mahomes shit. I know that that's very personal to me.
No, it's accurate. But it's very accurate though.
It's gold level. And she even in the video of her watching it, the goal after the match, she's like, "Oh wow, I didn't really know that I made that great contact with it," but she really did. And the keeper did not expect it at all. Beat her near post. City 1-0. Also, I'm seeing a lot of chatter from Arsenal and Man United fans saying that she was offside. Get VAR. Our stadium can support VAR. Can yours? Just saying.
Tom, let me hop in real quick. I just want to say that we all know the phrase, she's in her bag, or he's in his bag. I think you may think somebody has a bag and it's like, oh, it's a cute little Nike duffel, right? You take it to the gym. I thought it was Jess Park, right? Good player, utility player, young. Nah, Jess got a Louis. She got a big Louis, because what she was doing on that pitch, it was instant. It was crazy. It's like when you take that first shot at the club, you're like, okay, I'm lit. She was right there. And you don't get a win without it. So credit to her for being ready for her moment. Credit to Gareth for realizing this ain't working. Today, this moment, this match, you need something different, because that was a 63rd minute sub. He could have waited 7 more minutes, right? Tried to take it to the 70th or the 75th. But he said, no, let's start to change it and give ourselves a full 30 to make something happen. And then when you couple that with the Fowler sub, like you said, it just opened up the pitch. And on that goal, Bunny being Bunny and her, big striker self just out on the wing, it attracts attention. It throws the defense off. They're obviously worried about her shooting from there. So for her to obviously be unselfish as she is and just get the ball into the box, she has people there now, like you said, because she's outside. It was just tactics matter. And this is where your manager can win you a match that you're really not doing that well in, as he said in the halftime comments to the team. But yeah, once that goal went in, I knew okay, we're good. We're going to get these 3 points and at least temporarily hit the top of the table.
Yeah. And I think that this was a big lesson from the Brighton match. We didn't make any subs in that match. It was the same 11 players the whole 90 minutes, and it was the same result. So I think that does show growth as a manager. And just the manager says, hey, it's not working. I need to do something different. And he does. And it works. And then that was in the 83rd minute. In the 85th minute, Chloe Kelly can do some amazing things with a football at her feet. And she showed you that in the 87th minute when she just scored that Olympico off the corner. I don't it's been quite some time since I've seen an Olympico like that clean, like
super clean.
Like it was, the trajectory of the ball was such that like the keeper was never going to get it, and none of the traffic in front of in the 6 yard box was even going to be an issue. It just like a sidewinder missile almost into the net.
It hit the side netting first.
Yes.
For me, I was like, damn, that's one of the more crisper, like it was pretty clean.
It should be in the running for goal of the season. I know there might be like a long range bomb, like in open play that gets it, but it should definitely be in the top five because that clean of an Olympico wasn't a mistake. It wasn't super breezy to where the keeper was diving for it. Just she was stuck because the ball did, like, it looked like Chloe took an intentional shot. It didn't look like a corner. Like, she's like, I'm going to score right now. And she did. Because we had people there, but they couldn't even get a head to it because it wasn't meant for them. It was meant for the back of the net. Correct. Or the side of the net.
Yes. And I think that this, like, those two goals from those two players really showed you, like, okay, City does, in fact, have the talent to overcome a match when they're not performing well as a club. Like, you could probably say, like, 75 minutes, the club, like the team was not doing well in this match. Like, and just because the opponent was Leicester, like that's why, you know, we were able to stay in the match and not concede any goals. That being stated, we weren't able to really assert our will on the match. And those two players said, nah, I got this. We're not losing today. Not at home, not to them. No, we absolutely not. It was absolutely great to see a huge 3 points. And to Charlie's point, it did take us to the top of the table temporarily. Unfortunately, Chelsea did win their match over, who did they play? They played Everton, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not surprised. They just brought out the most expensive football in history. Sam Kerr's down. Don't worry about it. We'll go get it.
We got this, but
also City did just drop 200K on JBB. So, you know, like,
yeah,
it ain't tricking if you got it.
Correct. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I do want to get into the three signings that we made on deadline day. It was really, really, Niels was working. Like, he was working on January 30th and 31st. There had been rumors to bring in Laura Blinkilda Brown from Aston Villa for about a week and a half. But there was a $200,000 release clause, which, if you think about it, is relatively high. Our transfer fee for Dana was only $150,000. I believe that Asisat Ashuola to Bay FC from Barcelona was also $150,000. So we have spent quite a bit of money in this particular transfer window, in these last two transfer windows on just two players. But that being stated, when you get a player of Jill Roard's quality and then she goes down and you're looking for somebody who can replace them, you're really, really excited to see what can happen with them, especially since she already has good relationships with Kiara Keating, with Ruby Mace, with Jess Park, just from them playing with the U23 Lionesses. So that was a really exciting signing. I think that the next two were kind of surprises, but they do make sense in the grand scheme of things. We signed Poppy Pritchard from Durham, who it basically seems like we just played that FA Cup match and said, you know, we're about to lose an attacker and we need to be scouting. Oh, she's pretty good. She's good and they don't have the ball. Yeah, let's get this.
My type of recruiting. Like when you, it's like slamming down a big joke. It's like, no. We going to go get your best players. And that's the way football works, right? We see it on the men's side all the time. Somebody impresses and you dominate. They still look great even about being dominated. And you're like, nah, I see something. Think about how we got Nathan Ake on the men's side, right? Bournemouth was getting relegated, but we knew he was a gem. Let's go get him. And so, you know, Durham put up the best fight they could, lower level. But, like, yeah, I mean, Neil, since he's come in, I don't think he's done anything wrong. Like, that, this combo is immaculate right now. Like, they get it done. They know exactly the players they want. and they make it happen.
And then the third player is the youngest player that we've signed to a professional contract since Kiara Keating, in Taro Ahanalan of Piedmont United. I think it's really interesting that Piedmont United is not affiliated with a men's club. So one of the things that the O'Hanlon family asked is that, because she was basically leaving on a free since it wasn't a professional contract, they asked if City would pay a transfer fee and an add-on clause to the club, and City said yes. And I think that that's good business for growing the women's game, especially teams that are not necessarily affiliated with a men's team that are quote unquote those money makers. And so that allows Piedmont United is a squad in Ireland. So that that can allow, like, maybe there's another Irish player that we don't know enough about, and they're at Piedmont United. And it's like, oh, I like that. Okay, great. Taro Hanlon is a defender. I did get a chance to watch all three of their interviews. Hers was the one that really stuck out to me the most. As a defender, she was like, yeah, I'm a fullback, so I like to get up and attack, but I'm also a defender at heart, so I will get stuck in on a tackle. Like, I do enjoy that very, very much. I thought that was fantastic. Just to hear that from her. So, yeah, we got some really, really, and I think, Charlie, you've said this before, and it's specific to the men's side, like, when you're in the January transfer window, you're shopping for depth. You're not shopping for superstars. I think that this is the greatest example of shopping for depth in a transfer window, because you got a midfielder when you knew that you were thin at midfield. You got an attacker when you knew that an attacker left. You got a defender when you know a defender in Julie Blackstad left. So you're getting all of these depth signings that are young. The Laura Blinkley Brown is the oldest player of the group that we signed, and she's 22. So, like, just having that young core, and the I believe it was Poppy Pritchard, I also pointed it out, it was like, you know, it's good to have a mix of the young stars who are hungry and the older veterans that can, like, show them the path. So you have that in this squad. You know, when you think about Steph Houghton, Alex Greenwood, Lai Alexandri, Demi Stokes as the veterans, and then you have this crop of players like Kiara Keating, Ruby Mace, even Chloe Kelly and Lauren Hemp aren't necessarily that old necessarily. Because they're still, like, under 30, like, in their primes, essentially. So you have this core group of players that is there. And then you have, like, young players, older players, and then players in their prime. It's the way that this squad is constructed. Yes, it is a quote-unquote thin squad, but we also knew that we weren't going to be in Champions League, so you didn't necessarily have to have the deepest squad. Do I anticipate us making several runs at several competitions starting on Wednesday? Absolutely, I do. But I think with the signings that we have made, we will be able to compete for the league and the two trophy and the other two cup trophies as well.
And Tom, you laying it out like that made me realize that there are really those three age profiles that you want on the team, right? So 23, your U23s. You want your prime players, right? That's 23 to 28-ish, 27-ish. And then you have your veterans, 28, 29 and older. And I think the balance of the squad, a lot of that has been there for years. Like, some of these players have been City players for, you know, over half a decade. But then others who were brought in, they have come into their place. And now everybody is hungry, but nobody's greedy, if that makes sense. Like, this is not a case where you don't see people – or you don't think these people, the young players, like, oh, I got to play right now. It's like, no, I just got to City. Like, they are the place that as the ascent of their career versus, like, oh, I really just, I need minutes. Like, no, I'm okay stepping back and learning and then being a sub for now and trying to earn my way onto the pitch. The older players understand, like, hey, my time is coming to an end. I can give everything I have, but if my role is to shift into more of a mentor, great. And I think that's important for harmony Because like you said, we do have these domestic competitions. There's the domestic trouble that we could get on the women's side, right? Join the men. But it's, and so you do have opportunities. So it's just a matter of everyone being ready. And I'm excited to see what we do in this upcoming week.
Yeah, agreed. So we got Conti Cup against Spurs on Wednesday. I believe that is that at our place or theirs? I think it's theirs. Yeah, we play at their place. But we've already gone there and won. Like, and we know that we can do it midweek. Looks like Crunk set us up with GT on cup competitions as a whole. Let's listen to that clip.
Well, we're here to win, you know. So I think sometimes it's about creating as much rhythm as you can, and sometimes that is going with the same team. So for us, we are, you know, players are training really hard, performing really well, whether that's from the start or whether it's from the sideline. So I think for us, it's not. And we've never done this. We've never disrespected any competition that we've been in. You know, of course, we've rotated, but we rotate in the confidence that we have players who are more than capable of performing. So, yeah, we enjoy the competition. I think it's a good competition, the Continental Cup. I can imagine people probably place it as one of the lower trophies, but it's a trophy, and it's one that we've been successful in and one that we want to win this season. Well, we're here to win, you know, so I think sometimes it's about creating as much rhythm as you can, and sometimes that is going with the same team. So for us, we are, you know, players are training really hard, performing really well, whether that's from the start or whether it's from the sideline. So I think for us, it's not, and we've never done this, we've never disrespected any competition that we've been in. You know, of course, we've rotated, but we rotate in the confidence that we have players who are more than capable of performing. So, yeah, we enjoy the competition. I think it's a good competition, the Continental Cup. I can imagine people probably place it as one of the lower trophies, but it's a trophy, and it's.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trophy, and I what's most important is the trophy that we have won the most recently for City Women. And that was in the 2022-2023 season. And you're really hoping that we get to getting on that here pretty soon, because you know, it's too many trophies have not been won. Too many trophies accounted for, not at the Joy Stadium in the trophy room. And it's time to win another one. So this is like we said on the pre-match show, we got to do a North London two-step. So we have the Conti Cup on Wednesday against Spurs, Arsenal in the FA Cup on Sunday, both away. And I've been saying this since we last went to Arsenal, like Kiara Keating is starting that match, and Kiara Keating is going to do everything in her power to make sure that she has a clean sheet. Like, just, she thinks she lost the league game there, and she's not going to lose again this, at that place. So I'm really looking forward to that particular match. I do think Gareth did kind of say that he's going to kind of roll with the same 11. I would not be surprised if there probably will be some different starters in this particular match, but you'll still see the talent on the bench. But he also won't be hesitant to throw in a sub when it's necessary. So I'm looking forward to it. This is just going to be a big week for, and I think it's going to be a season defining week, even though we're not playing in the league. Like, even though these are cup competitions, these can still define your season. And, you know, Tottenham's been on fire. Recently, they had a good result over Spurs. I believe that they won their group in the Conti Cup group stages. So that's not going to be a pushover. And we know, as Arsenal is coming back from all the injuries, they are a dangerous squad. even if they chose not to show that over the weekend.
So, Tom, I think we both believe City's going to win. I guess my question, we're going to win both matches, right? We're not going to call our team to lose in the cup. We think we get it. Do you think these are one goal wins or two goal wins, two plus goals?
I see the Spurs match as a two goal win. I think that yesterday really showed that City has some of the top talent in the league, and they have players that if they decide that we're not going to lose, we're not going to lose. I don't think that Spurs have that yet. So I think that even if we are at their place, I think we're still going to go in there and get advance. Now, could I see a situation in which the state of the game is so well in hand, but we're only up by one goal and we kind of throttle it down? Yes, I can. I don't want to see it, but I can, just like you're looking forward to the FA Cup. But I think that the FA Cup match, I actually think that that's going to go, because they do not do replays in the Women's FA Cup, so they just go to extra time. I think that that match is going to extra time. And I think that we will score. There will be a goal from an unlikely source. I don't know if that's like Laia Alexandri on a header on a set piece, or Layla Wahabi from outside the box, or Yui scoring her first goal in a City shirt. But I have a feeling that we're going to just score an extra time, and it's going to, send us through. And I think that that can really like change the trajectory of both our season and Arsenal's, which I think is important, since the British media had decided that Manchester City Women Football Club does not exist.
We're ghosts, and I love it. That's beautiful. Like, and maybe with the London connection, right? Chelsea's beating Arsenal, red and blue, but it's okay. We can stay low and build. That's what we do.
Yeah. As the good poet Wayne Carter said, real G's move in silence like lasagna. So just moving in silence. So that's all that I have for Manchester City Women Football Club.
Baby Blue Baddies, as we
say. Baby Blue Baddies. Of course. So I think we're going to move on to the Burnley match.
I can run the lineups, huh?
Yeah, and I know that that's been a while. I want to make sure that there's not any, let's see, is there any clips that Pep would have stated? I'm not sure when he said this, but let's hear Pep dunk on UEFA before we get started, because why not?
As a lawyer judge that he is, the president of UEFA, he should wait. Wait. And after, do whatever he wants. So it was the sentence he has to sentence about the UEFA. He has to respect it. And he has to wait. I have a lot of job to do in UEFA, to be involved in that cases that the lawyers should respect the procedure. And after, he knows we have the right to defend ourselves. As a lawyer judge that he is, the president of UEFA, he should wait. Wait. And after, do whatever he wants. So it was the sentence he has to sentence about the UEFA. He has to respect it. And
I think we played that clip last week. My bad, guys. Although I don't think that we've recorded since this has happened, but Calvin Phillips has officially moved to West Ham. Oh, no, we did talk about this in the last one. Never mind.
Calvin Phillips has been struggling since we last recorded. Bless his heart. He got some work. My man's got to pick up tempo. He's getting caught, and it's very preventable, and I think it can be fixed, but also I think you see the rust of just when you have not played for over 18 months consistently as a top flight footballer, as a six. It's hard.
Yeah,
it's very hard.
When your foot's not on the ball, it's difficult. So Charlie, why don't you go ahead and read off these lineups City versus Burnley for us?
So for those that forgot, it's been a minute, right? This was the Wednesday match, January 31st. We played at the Etihad, and we came out with this beautiful lineup of Ederson and goal, left to right, Vardiol, Ake, Stones, Rico, and then in the midfield, a partnership of Mateus Nunes and Rodri, and then our attacking mids of Doku, De Bruyne, and Foden, and Julian Alvarez up top. Of course, this is Vincent Kompany coming back to the Etihad, and I think first Premier League match, right? Yeah, because obviously the beginning of the season was at their place. So that was always great. You know, man has a whole statue. He's a club legend. But I think he knew they were about to get that work today, and anything less than a four-goal loss was probably a win for them, right? Like, just to be respectable, be competitive, and not get 7-8 dropped on their heads, right? They just wanted to be – they didn't want to be like Southampton back in the day where they could get blasted.
So, Lando, you see this lineup, and what were your immediate thoughts about it?
Win, domination, must-have, Burnley. Was Vincent Kompany going to come out dressed like a DJ or a bouncer outside a club again? That was the main thing that was on my mind going into this match. It's the hat and the puffy jacket combination that just has me perplexed at times. Vincent, I know you know better. And quite frankly, I think it's time we move past this look. There's been a frustration inside of me. I've held this for quite some time, so I want it to be out now that we've played each other twice and we've had a chance to kind of see it in these wintry months. Do us all a favor, Vincent, and change up the fucking attire, brother. Change up the fucking attire. That was my thoughts going into this match and this lineup, and just being completely honest with you.
Lando, I'm going to propose to you and Crunk that you do your own episode where you literally just shit on every Premier League manager, because I know you got beef with all of them. So...
What you just actually set up is for the fact that in a day or two, an announcement is to be made for Vincent Kompany. And I don't know, you just did that. I didn't. You just chose to go there. Now, yes, there is a little bit of some history to a certain particular manager coming out day after I going in on a particular manager. So, yes, I just hope I'm not two for two here, because I actually like Vincent, damn it.
So I feel like, guys, because this is so long ago, I doubt this is fresh in our minds. And I think the match today was obviously more important in how it and what happened. So I'm going to go this. I'm going to put an OG Crunk move where you just run down what happened. And then if something, you know, hits, you know, y'all stop me. So I just want to start with this. Our possession numbers, 74.1% possession, 25.9% for them. Total passes, which is always a great thing to see, 795. 270. You know how hard it is to get 795 passes in a match? Like, insane. I think we dominated from the jump, and it wasn't a matter of if we were going to score, it was just how soon. Are we going to beat that 15-minute mark? Will it be by 20th? And the first goal came from Julian Alvarez, assisted by Mateus Nunes, who was ablaze down the middle of the pitch. And if you remember, this was the goal where he got to the byline and was composed enough to stop, reset, and then lofted a perfect ball over the center back, and Alvarez heads it in, 1-0 City, and it just looked like, okay, how many will we get, right? Anybody want to comment on that? Go ahead.
I think I said it when we were talking about the women's match, like watching this particular match and just seeing us being able to tens. And we said, like, all right, Rodri, Rico, like, and you other three defenders, like, y'all got the back half of the pitch. Like, we're going to, like, us other five, we're going to go score. We're going to go defensive life's havoc. Like, and they did that. And it was very, like, it was almost disrespect. Like, you thought, like, oh, like, we're going to disrespect Brownhill and Bergay so much because we don't think that they can mark KDB and Nunez. Like, so we're not going to let them do that. And they were in hell for 90 minutes. It was really refreshing to see, because I think that to me, what was most important was, like, this is a primer for, we now know that KDB and Phil can play in the midfield at the same time. And maybe we just, you know, we'll just throw Bernardo out there and say, we might get you some box to box action, but stay on that right wing, you know, interplay with Phil, interplay with KDB. But like being able to play two tens at the same time, I think that is massive. And I think that's been my biggest fear as like KDB has gotten back into fitness. Like, are we going to be able to do this? What are we going to be able to do tactically to allow those two to play together in the center of the pitch? And I think that goal was a good, even though it wasn't necessarily those two players that we were talking about, although I believe that, if I remember correctly, it was KDB that fed Nunez the ball, right?
Yes, yeah. That is correct.
I mean,
he set it up.
Key pass. You know, I love me a key pass. So, that was just encouraging to see that, like, yes, we can play in a system where two tens work together.
My initial thoughts, just kind of going as you spoke to some of that, Charlie, I thought early on I really loved what I saw out of Matias Nunez. I think more about first one, the two touches were a little heavy. There were actual some opportunities before that goal that I thought we could have, with a little bit more crisp play from him, we would have probably got a goal earlier. But he really played for me a game that, to your point, Tom, if we're going to play with the two tens, we're going to have some support, knowing that we're going to have an eight like a Matias. And I thought we got a quality game out of him. So I'm really happy to kind of see that, especially with the key pass from your boy, Kevin, Matias, to be able to clean it up and get that left footed assist. I mean, he's right footed. And for him to make that left-footed ball, that was quite impressive. So I was big on what I saw out of Nunez.
Yeah, that 27 shirt is good when you start out at City, right? Like, we hope he doesn't switch to a number that's not supposed to be his, because the only reason a defender should ever get 7, I'm talking to you, Javon Celo.
I was waiting for a name to drop.
27 was beautiful.
It was perfect for you.
And then you got too big when you got that single digit. This ain't you, yeah. My boy. Anywho, sorry. Took me to a dark place. Not too far after that, 6 minutes later, in the 22nd minute, we have a free kick, probably, 35 yards out. You could tell this was a training ground routine where Kevin gets on the ball. He spots it. I think he said in the post-match, like, the defender kind of opened up and that lane was there. All he had to do was, like, kick it straight. And Julian makes a beautiful run. And scoops it right over the keeper into the left side of the net. That's his brace. We are up 2-0. And King Kev is back with his assist that made him the single third highest assist leader in Premier League history, and far, like, I'm talking hundreds less matches than Giggs or Cesc Fabregas. So King Kev has announced his return. How did y'all feel after that goal? I'll start with you, Lando.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, immediately, if you saw the bench celebrate, go straight to the trainer that I think I think he's the actual creator of that play, because they all just absolutely loved on him for probably seeing it, have the vision of it, probably took it from another player. I don't know if you guys know, but that's typically how it works from a coaching staff standpoint. You'll have your assistants kind of be in charge of certain things and have to draw up certain things. So it's beautiful to see that something that's probably kind of came from an office standpoint, drew up and got creative, and to see it put out like that. Oh, just the Kevin brilliance. The also, if you've seen another angle, there's an angle of Joscal Gavardio giving the eyes to Kevin, like telling, like he's seen Julian and the space, and he's looking at Kevin like, yeah, it's there, do it. Like it's that kind of stuff to me, man, that I just eat that shit up, because for me, it speaks to the teamwork. It speaks to the level of camaraderie that it's our guy, Kevin. We know what he's going to be able to do, but we know what he wants to do. And everyone on the pitch knows it. And somehow, some way, it gets up being positive for City. So I love to see it. I was amped up. Tom, what did you think about that play?
I forget our man's name, but like I also was like, oh man, like that coach really drew that up. Like you could, you could tell by the reactions, like, yes, like that is his job. Like everybody was hype about it. And like that goes to really, really good coaching, because like, that's the man that just sits there and watch Burnley defend set pieces. And if you think about it, like think about how many set pieces Burnley probably has had to defend this season. So like a lot, right? A lot. So then you then like say, okay, well, they got this tell, like, and it's all set up based off of this tell, and we, you know, we're going to exploit it. And like, so when you see Yasko's face, like, yeah, like everybody on the squad knows, and they were clicked in with it. Like you can't beat that. Also, shout out to Julian Alvarez scoring a brace on your birthday. Like, I mean, what has this young man not done in world football at this point?
It's really weird.
Like, he's completed football at 24 now. Like there's nothing else for him to do. He could retire tomorrow and be like, I did it all. I got every medal.
Just so much calm to him too. It's not even like you've seen that moment from him yet to where like on an off season social media or a girlfriend or a leaked live Insta or something to where you see him like going off or celebrating. There's just so much poise to him at a young age. Shit's fucking scary, dude. The shit's fucking really scary, because the sky's the limit for a guy who just puts braces up on his birthday. And it's like, it's not even affected by it. It's just weird.
The biggest credit I can give to Julian Alvarez is since Haaland went out, I had no concerns about the offense. Like there was never a thing like, oh my God, can City score? Will we score enough? Who's going to get the goals? Because if you are a real, you know, City supporter and you just know the Pep era, we literally did it without a dominating striker for like 3 years in a row. Like as Aguero went down and, you know, we were floating between him and Gabby, false nine seasons, like we know how to score. The system gets the goals. But to see someone come in and just say, no, I'm going to get some of those goals. I want to run my numbers up. I want a 10-10 season in a PL. I think that's what he's going for, right? So, like, he's clinical. He's been played out of position. Julian's not a 10. If you watch anything he did at River Plate, he is a forwards four. He is not a 10. So he's learning on the job, plus being productive, plus giving you insane work rate, one of the best persons in the Premier League, probably in the world. You do not want him charging after you if you're a keeper or a defender. Just amazing. And just, I won't even say beginning his ascent, because, like, his prime is, like, 2-3 years away. Like, you don't peak till you're, like, 26, 27. So we're really just starting in the infancy of what he can be. And if he can be, I know this is a Man City podcast, but if he can play in that kind of Wayne Rooney role as a second striker off of Haaland, the way that Rooney played off of you know, those strikers at United, it could really be scary hours. Because what do you do? Like, you're just in perpetual hell when he's on the pitch with Haaland or with anybody else.
Well, didn't Pep say that, like, he is basically, like, managing him similar to what he did with Messi at Barcelona? Like, just because the skill set is similar. Like, you see it. You see it. And I think that, like, I'm not going to sit up here and say he's about to be Messi.
Of course
not. Like, I do think that is his possible ceiling. Like, he can do that if he wants to. And the fact that he is only 24 and will probably only, like, knocking on wood, barring an injury, only get better. I mean, that to me, like, that is his ceiling. And I know that probably a lot of Argentinian national team fans are probably hoping the same thing, honestly.
So, guys, I'm drawing a blank here. I'm not going to lie to you. I see in the One Football Report that Rodri scored the third goal. I have no recollection of this goal. I don't know how Phil Foden assisted. If you guys want to take over, somebody help me.
Absolute marvelous goal. Right outside the box, right outside the line. Got brought in from the right side. It was a one shot for Rodri. He played a little 1-2. The thing about Rodri and these shots that are getting really, and I think Charlie just kind of, it hit him right there. It was very, very eerily similar to that Champions League final. Nestled into to the bottom corner, defender in the way, kind of nice little curvature to it. This is a CDM, man. This is a CDM having shots like that. It's just, it's scary for how this team is progressively finding ways to just keep the clicking, keep hitting different knots. Yeah. Go ahead, Charlie.
To that point, Lando, is it fair to say that like Pep just took Fernandinho and like did a Pokemon evolution? And like he just made like, like a ball.
He made him Charizard. Rodri's Charizard.
No, Charmander Charizard, bro. Shit's crazy. Because that's all it is. It's like he does everything Fernandinho did, but he does it all better. The only thing he doesn't have in his locker is Fernandinho's pace when he was younger, right? Like Fernandinho was a blur. He definitely was quicker naturally, but he's bigger and he passes, I think, a little bit better. His range is better. He's solid in the air. He has way better foot, like dribbling ability. And we see now he's on step overs and shit. And these outside the box shots are his shot. That's a Rodri. Like, just call it a Rodri. He gets around the line. You know, he's going to the goalkeeper's left and good luck stopping it because it's on a rope. So that really took us right to half, or that was right after halftime. Anyways, 3-0, subs get made. I think the biggest sub here was seeing Erling Haaland's return in the 71st minute. After him, you had Grealish come on for Foden 5 minutes later, and then you had a double switch at the end. Kovacic and Gomez came on for Rodri and Alvarez. And, of course, because we're City men, we got to give up a goal. Come on now. Like, what's a clean sheet? Who needs that? It's not cute. So Burnley got something to take.
A little shit dribbler that they just like barely got through. Nice byline drive by Fofana, which Fofana, I'm sorry if I'm gonna rag your manager. I gotta be honest here too, my man. I don't know what your wages are. I'm sure it's great, but good lord, you're gonna come against City in the Etihad. You know you're gonna be on television. Brother, clean it up. Good night. My man's beard was patchy. Patchy.
Hey, bro, as a patchy beard guy, like, let that man cook, okay? It's a life. He just out here just getting in, you know? Grime mode. It's cold. I'm going to take whatever care I can get on my face.
Hey, I'm not trying to be cute. Put a little bit of extra warmth. That's all I'm looking for.
It feels good, okay? It feels better than being barefaced. That's all I'm going to say with cold out there. My man just got his transfer from Chelsea. He's trying to get some minutes. He actually did go ball out in their other game.
He did.
I think he got a brace. Done and dusted. 3-1 City win. The streak continues. Still no losses this calendar year. Have not lost a match since December 6th. It's been a while. So we just rolling out here. Any other last thoughts about this one, or should we jump into the big game that happened this Monday?
I'm good. Let's jump into this match because this is.
Lando, you want to go 3-for-3? You want to run through the lineups, my guy?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. I got it pulled up here as I was looking at it, but we had a starting lineup of a familiar face that we were dying to have. Up top, we have the big dog, Erling Haaland. Right behind him, we had starting Julian Alvarez, Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva lined up out at right, Phil Foden doing Phil Foden things.
Lando, stop. I just like a mixtape, right? Run that back one more time. Who was starting behind Haaland? Just run that shit back. Run that shit back, my guy. First five, who we got?
We have Erling Haaland, big dog, up top. Behind him, nestled in, we have Julian Alvarez and Kevin De Bruyne. with Bernardo Silva. With Bernardo Silva up at right and Phil Foden doing Phil Foden things. Behind those boys, we had Rodri at the CDM spot. Nathan Ake and Ruben Diaz were the center backs, followed by Kyle Walker at right and Gvardiol doing Gvardiol things on the left. Ederson was our man in net. Boys, what'd you think about the lineup?
So thinking about this lineup, it reminded me a lot of the lineup at midweek in that, like, oh yeah, we're just going to split the five. Like, we're just going to, like, five of y'all are going to attack. The other five are going to defend. And we're if you notice, like, this was one of those matches where Kyle Walker didn't get nearly as high as he had been in the past. You saw more Vardiol getting a little bit higher, but not also like kind of like limiting how high he got. And then it was almost like they wanted all of that space for those four players behind Haaland to just go to work. And I was excited at what the potential could be as the match unfolded.
I mean, 9:17:47 on the pitch at the same time as hell. I think back to the Manchester massacre when we had the double hat tricks, right? Like, when these three are on the pitch, anything can happen. And so seeing that come through around 2 Eastern while I'm with children, I'm joyful as fucking class. Because I'm like, yes, I'm going to get off work. I'm going to hit the bar, which is like 8 minutes away from the job, and be able to watch a masterpiece. And I had no idea that I was about to watch something really, really beautiful today.
So I did get a new gig. I think I've told the people that. So it's kind of a no phone area. So, and then, like, there's not the TV does not have a traditional cable. So there was not the USA Network that I could watch the match on. But thank God for Google Alerts and FOTMob and One Football and my Apple Watch. I was able to kind of tap in from time to time, just kind of like run to the back, catch 2 minutes, come back in front, run to the back, catch 2 more minutes, run to the back. Now, I will say, for about 45 minutes of doing that, the first 45 was not a happy camper.
Yeah, and they open up the scoring. Maupai gets himself an opportunity from a goal kick in the 21st minute. Disappointing. I think it's been noted on social media a little bit of the actual little play that was done by Thomas Frank. I think a lot of folks are chalking this up to a nice little drawn-up play as well. Ivan Toney comes from an offside position, decides to set up a little bit of a pick on Nathan Ake. The goal kick gives a direct bounce through Josko Gvardiol, I think, just has an absolute lapse and fart of it all. Bounces straight to Maupai perfectly, gets himself a one-on-one and scores. I mean, not an ideal start, guys. Didn't like it at all. Reminder, this team did the double on us last year. How are we feeling at this point?
I mean, go ahead. Real quick, like, I didn't see it live, right? So I just get the notification, again, teaching children towards the end of the day, and I'm like, fuck, how do we give up a goal? And because it's Nel Maupai, nothing about it made me think it was going to be good. And then I saw what happened, and I was like, oh, classic long ball bullshit. Great screen by Toney. I'm surprised he made it one-on-one, honestly. He still got to finish it, so he took his chance. But I will say that because of the timing of it, and I always think we're going to win 3-1. I said, oh, we got plenty of time to win 3-1. Like, I was trying to get a bet in D.C. to my friend in Virginia because I was like, we're going to win this game. City's plus 110. And DraftKings been a dipshit, and I could not get the play in. I was so fucking mad. But I knew that we were going to win. Tom, how'd you feel?
So when I got the notification on my phone, ran to the back, I was like, and first of all, I was like, that fucking player, like, why? Yeah. And I think, like, to me, like, yes, Yasko played the ball poorly, but I was like, Ruben Diaz, like situational awareness, buddy. Like we're like that's supposed to be your thing, and that's not your thing on this particular goal. And like to me, that was the most disappointing thing. I think that being stated, that might not have even been like the top five play that Flecken made, because like he was really standing on his head like the whole match. Like, and like I by that point, I think he had already had three saves. Like, so it's not like we weren't, and they weren't like saves that were like right at the frame of his body. It was like saves like, oh, I need to get over here and get this. Like, oh, I need to get over here and get this. Like, so he was like, we were making him move, but he was making those plays. So for him to like you said, like it was stated before, this was most likely a training ground play. And they just converted. And so like, and their goalkeeper was part of that, and he was on fire like for most of the first half, and it's like it was difficult to process. Like
he legit, I mean, just to your point, I'm having a hard time understanding how a goalkeeper had such a great game for someone who gave up three goals. Like it's thoroughly confusing to me, because, and it's valid, it's such a valid point. That first half he was prime. I mean, he was prime Casillas. He was doing everything possible. It was kind of scary. But boys, sticking through, staying tough, having the fortitude that City men do. Before the half, we have ourselves an equalizer. Phil Foden gets on the right end of a pop-up horribly played. And this is the beautiful thing about having a guy like Kevin De Bruyne just whipping balls in left and right. You fucking know, even if we can't get a hold of one, something's going to be done right. And that defender sorry, just...
bro. That's hilarious.
That guy just...
I'm so childish. This is great. Sorry.
He absolutely doesn't know how to play this ball. Goes almost directly into the air. Out comes Phil Foden, which if you've watched Phil Foden from tracking where this play originally started, he was literally playing passes to the back line before Kevin had that ball brought out to him and it was whipped in. Phil Foden's tracking today was absolutely marvelous. Phil gets on the right end of this, ball comes to his feet, nutmegs a player, gets it in, 1-1 in the extra time right before the half. We're feeling all right, boys? Tom, we're nestled in at this point. 1-1, we're feeling okay with the updates?
Oh, yeah. Like, at that point, like, I was like, okay, like, I can wait till halftime to, like I'll wait till I get the halftime, then I can go see the replays and the highlights. And, like, watching it, that was the first time in the entire match of the 47 minutes of the match that had been played that Flecken put a foot wrong. Like he just guessed the wrong way, like because he was anticipating the deflection. So like because he anticipated the deflection, he went one way and the ball went the other way. I was like, oh, well, I mean, like if he can't do much better than he has in this half. Like, you know, he has he's on the score sheet with an assist. So like, yeah, like I'm thinking like, okay, like we're game on. I don't know how we're gonna win this match, but we're gonna win this match. Charlie, how were you thinking? What were you feeling at this point?
As you're talking about it, I'm thinking how easily Phil Foden could have messed this up. because he could have been pressing, not in a bad way, like, and because of him, just because of the time, right? Like players mess up, they over. Think about Darwin Nunez, right? The man's the unluckiest footballer I've ever seen. The man hit the wall four times in a match. So, like, anything's possible. So for Phil to be that cool and to define the word clinical in that moment, that's all you can ask for. Like, that's maturity. That is pouncing on an opportunity. We haven't played a great match. We're down a goal. We need a goal before half to really just say, okay, we're going to win. You don't want to have that extra momentum for them. And it's in stoppage time, right? 45 plus 3. Like, this is... not everything's on the line, because again, you got a whole nother half to play. But if you don't get a goal, the outlook is far different from them when they come out. But by giving up this goal, you saw their heads drop a little. you saw our chest go out a little bit more and say, okay, we're going to do what we do. We came here for 3 points. We're leaving London with 3 points. And so I think like it was pivotal that that goal went in that moment.
Question for the group. So I think we all saw his celebration after the goal. Is he channeling his inner Andre Kirilenko because they both wear 47? Because that's where my mind went, personally.
They don't even shoot guns over there, dog. They're not even legal. So he's really on some, like, I've been watching, like, some American cinema or some, you know, Netflix. And I respect it. Live out your dreams.
I'm just so thankful for the Andre Kirilenko reference. I mean, fuck, man.
AK-47 out here, dog. Going crazy.
Those squads were real, bro. Darren Williams, but I'm trying to... Memo Okor, there it is. I was looking for the big man.
Ronnie Brewer.
Ronnie Turioff off the bench as well. Yeah. He was on that roster. Yeah, he was on that roster. And,
of course, the ball with himself with the painted on beard. We love you, Carlos Boozer.
Hey!
I don't love you.
And this would be a good opportunity for Charlie to tell me how he feels about his university that he represents, Carlos Boozer. How do you feel about that school?
Here's the thing, man. We don't, what they say, like, you don't go down to the level of fleas and rats and rodents. So we don't care about them boys.
I wanted to bring them down there so bad.
They caught that L. That's all that matters. They did what they're supposed to do. The betting book said they were 4.5-point underdogs. They lost by more than 4.5. So they are who we thought they were. We'll get them back in March again. That's all.
I have railed this train far enough. Back to our boys. We start the second half in the 53rd minute where we have an absolute wondrous, spectacular ball in on a beautiful run. Kevin De Bruyne crosses it in. Phil Foden makes the run. Like I said earlier, boys, Phil Foden was everywhere today. 9.7 rating, boys on the foot mob. Beautiful, beautiful, nice little header touch. Nestled it into the back corner. 2-1, we take the lead. How are we feeling, Charlie?
That's a striker's finish, bro. Like, that is a nines finish. That is not a midfielder, winger, playmaker's finish. So that right there for me is practice, repetition. Like, that's not the first time he's attempted that. I don't know what drills he's done or they do or if it's just his personal stuff. But, like, he's tried that before. And, like, to have the dexterity to know where to snap your neck to not overhit it, to let the ball do the work off that beautiful pass from, of course, King Kev. Who's on his way to being number two in Premier League history in assists and far less games than Nasty Gigs. I believe that, like, Phil Foden announced himself to the world as, like, you talk about Haaland, you talk about KDB, don't forget about me. Like, the 47's iconic, Stockport zone. This is his breakout season. The same way we saw it in Arsenal, right, when Saka broke out, we were like, oh, Saka's here. Like, this is Foden season. And I think this is crazy. I think if he wore the number 7, I swear to God, everybody would look at him differently. Like, numbers matter in football, right? We know that. Because he wears 47, it throws you off a little bit. And we know he does it, you know, for family stuff. But, like, if he wore 7, it'd be like, oh, my gosh, Foden's here. But that's really what's happening now. So I'm happy to see it.
So for me, like, I couldn't get back to watch the replay right after that goal was scored. But, like, what I was thinking is like, oh, like, is this going to be one of those jump on my back boys? Like Phil said, like, jump on my back. I got y'all. Like we not losing in London today. Like, no, we're not doing that. And then seeing the goal back, like I can't determine which is better. Like, the pinpoint accurate pass from Kevin De Bruyne or like the snap, like the full snap header from Phil to get it into the court. Cause in most of those instances, like to Charlie's point, yes, that is the striker's finish because in most instances they're telling players like head the ball back the direction that it came from. So you're thinking that if he's going to get his head on it, it's going to go like back to the keeper's right. But no, like, he was able to get his neck all the way around and get it to the keeper's left. And, like, just, like, sometimes you forget the quality that is in your squad, especially, like, when those players in the squad are asked to do different things or they've been on the bench hurt. And then when you see it, it's like, oh, yeah, nobody in the world is touching us. Like, I said what I said. No one in the world is touching us. So I don't care what, you know, what Real got going on. I don't care what Arsenal and Liverpool got going on. No one in the world is touching us if this is the way that we're going to play.
Scary, scary, scary hours. I can't disagree with you guys on this. I would actually just reinforce the point with Phil Foden's second goal here is it was such an awkward opportunity for him. The ball didn't come to him very clean. For him to get down in the position that he got to get the way he did get his head on it, I mean, just, man, just unbelievable. Go ahead, Charlie. Something
also just mind. Like the timing of the run, right? Like, yeah. he was very narrowly about to be offside. He literally just, it was the perfect timing of, like, ball hit by Kev, he breaks past the defender, and that's why he got so wide open. And again, that is a finisher's sequence, because those are the people that time their runs like that, right? Like, that's the runs they make. And so you could have told me that was Alvarez scoring the goal, and I'm like, yeah, that's Alvarez goal. It makes sense. But no, it's 47. And yeah, I'm so glad that Pep's seen the light. That's what's happening. Pep has seen the light. We have the best players on the pitch. We know our best 11. It picks itself at this point. And so I feel like Phil, Kevin, Holland, and Rodri are in Ederson, right? We know five of them for sure. Kyle is six. I would say Ake is seven. And you give me four others, and we're going to go win anything.
Yeah, I can't help but think about the progression that's needed with some of our players and the next level ability that some of our players have to kind of just separate ourselves in certain games. And it takes me to our third goal, where we have a guy who misses a bunny earlier, I think should have actually put us in the lead 1-0, who is here to do those things, in Erling Haaland. And we talk about expanding game and being able to kind of create and adapt and get even more diverse. Erling Haaland and his one-touch ability and his ability to kind of have a little bit of vision plays a perfect, perfect 1-2 with Phil. That leads to our third goal. Phil Foden takes it into the box, finishes clean with the left. At this point, with how amazing Flecken has had of a game, you kind of have to wonder if Phil Foden had his match all day. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible for him to be able to kind of have a one-on-one based on a nice assist from Erling Haaland. We go up 3-1, and that, guys, I have to say it, right? We're taking a big sigh of relief here. We're breathing. I mean, at this point, Jeremy Doku hasn't even gotten on the pitch. You know, which I thought he played a fantastic game. Loved what I saw from Jeremy Doku. But you could make to a certain extent, it's pressure-free football at that point, right? We know what's done is done. So that's why he's able to kind of be the threat that he is, which I always think he's a threat. I'm not trying to downplay what he does. I just simply think mentality-wise, it's a little bit more freer than others. But, I mean, what are we thinking after that third goal? Absolutely marvelous from Erling and Phil.
Real quick, and I'll let Tom run. I just want to say, Tom, because I think you're breaking up. I just want to say it before I mess up, is I was excited that Kevin and Haaland were going to play over 80 minutes, because the only way to get match fitness is to play. And you have to go. Like, you have to develop your lungs, and, like, Haaland got to break the rust. And, like, these are the minutes where you're going to need to score a goal in the 85th minute, and you got to be ready. So I was just happy to see them stay on the pitch. Like, when Silva came out, I said, great, Bernardo's done a lot this year. Get a rest. Thank you. Leave Kev and Haaland on so they could play. Tom, sorry about that.
No, you're good. I think for me, like, that was the most aesthetically pleasing of all three of the goals, because it was a team goal. And, like, I'm not sure that Phil even really got a touch on the initial ball in. I think he just kind of dummied it so that Haaland would get it first, and then ran onto it, which was
spot on. That's how it happened.
Which was amazing, like thinking like, oh my gosh, like how are we able to like come in? Like he was running full speed, stopped, let Haaland get this touch on the ball, continued his run, and Haaland still got the pass with the perfect weight on it. And then like at that point he was just 1v1 in on Flecken. And like to your point, Lando, like he had Flecken's number at that point, like because Flecken had 12 saves in this match. Yeah. 12.
Wow. Wow.
So like to know that each one of those shots from Phil like went in out of a man who had 12 saves, because if a goalkeeper has 12 saves, you're gonna say that like, yeah, he had a pretty good match. Like,
yeah, he did work.
You know, yeah.
He had the best match a keeper could have had in that match, right? Because that Kyle Walker shot, so many keepers are not stopping that. Like, that's a missile on target, low. Like, it's a great save. If anything, that's the one that should have went in the early flurry. So once he did that, I was like, oh, are we going to score today? So credit to him. Like, he made himself some money. Like, these are the types of performances that get you noticed from other players, other clubs around the world. It's like, oh, Brentford's got somebody that we might be able to say is a really great shot stopper. He stopped City 12 times. That is incredible.
Well, if I remember in the commentary correctly, I do believe that they just brought in a goalkeeper. So this might be one of those like, hey, I'm fighting for my job. Like, this job is mine sort of thing. And then like to have a performance like that against a squad like us. Yes, that's definitely going to like have people on notice. It's like, you know, like, I don't think that Mikel Arteta has figured out the whole Raya Ramsdale situation. And so like, if you know, if he's looking, it's like, okay, well, this dude knows how to work under pressure. Seems obviously he knows how to distribute because he's got it on the assist sheet against City. So maybe that's, I don't know, something to look into for Arsenal, but I don't really look into, teams that are not consistently winning trophies, so I wouldn't know.
I feel that. Any other thoughts on this match? Anything that we want to go into later on into the game? I think we continue to feel aggressive. I've noted Jeremy Doku in the sub in came in the 71st minute. I loved it. I love Charlie's point about actually getting those game time reps for Haaland and Kevin later into the game. I really do believe that that's quality to see right now. By his own admission, a few weeks ago, Kevin De Bruyne noted that he's only about 60% back. I saw some really good sprints from him, some really good runs that I was really kind of not necessarily watching the outcome of the play, but just watching how he performed and how he felt in that moment. And I feel like if we can continue to get more of those minutes for him, we're hitting that prime. Boys, February is here. And if you look at the rest of February, it's pretty easy. So it's prime time season now, you know?
It's easy, but not but. And I would say Pep is setting up the squad, because if you notice, there's a reason he only made two subs today. Like, when you watch Pep, you understand why he's doing what he's doing. It's because we play Everton and Copenhagen in like 3 days. It's like a Saturday, Tuesday back-to-back. So you can't go 90-90 that close. So his goal, I think, is to try to like rotate half of this squad out. He can put five players who didn't play at all, like Jack. You'll see Doku and Jack should start. You'll see Stones. You'll see Akanji, right? You'll see the guy, Nunez will get minutes. Rico might get a start against Everton, because he's setting up to go full out. We don't mess around with Champions League, right? We want to dominate that first leg, especially away, and then just crush it at the Etihad. So I think he's really setting it up. And we have another Saturday, Tuesday coming up in February with the Chelsea-Brentford double, both at the Etihad. So it's not hard. Like, we do this every year. So Pep is the master of this. But you can definitely see, like, he's setting up with a fully healthy squad now to make sure that we are 100% ready to go in every match. And we this is where we don't lose. Like, I was reading an article. We won 21 in a row a few seasons ago. 15 wouldn't surprise me right now. We're already at 9 in all competitions. So if we finish have a perfect February, setting up for that crazy March we have, it's gonna get real scary out there.
I pose to you a question. and I want, not necessarily maybe a question, but just an insight and a thought, and I'd like to hear what you guys think about this. Have you guys noted the, I don't want to say unwarranted, because obviously I'm not there at the trading pitch and I don't see how this guy's impact is there. I get it completely because I love the signing when he's there. For a first year guy, I think there's a lot of trust for a Josco Gavardio right now. And there's a bit of an amoeba that he plays on that left side that towards the end of this match, for me personally, I just thought he really has a lot of trust in him being able to even stay up front. I actually think he's been playing with what our success was last year with John Stones' amoeba coming from defense and going up to mid. I'm seeing that with the Josco Gavardio in ways that I'm just asking myself. I know it's Pep, and I trust and confide in what he does, but I just can't help but think to myself, man, that's a lot of trust for a guy in his first year with us. Anyone else getting a little just kind of iffy or scared about that?
It's not the first year thing, because I think that like Gavardiol has kind of announced himself, like, if we want to play with a true, because to me, he is like, him and Rico are really the only true quote unquote fullback, or him, Rico and Walker are really the only true fullbacks that we have in the squad. And he is the only one that can play on the left side. So if we want to play with a true left fullback, he can get up and down. I think my worry with Josco does not necessarily come in with his Pep experience, but just his age experience. Like, he's 23. Like, you know, like there's going to be things, like some things he's going to, you know, misread or not be there, or have to, you know, have to take a yellow card. Just especially, like, I don't think that I'm not sure if you're going to see him play with Daku a lot, just because I'm not sure that you want both of your left-sided players that high up the pitch. And I think Pep probably is aware of that and like kind of like keeps them opposite. Like, to Charlie's point, is like, if he's going to rotate the squad, Gavardiol is probably not going to get the start if Daku is. But to me, I just think that my biggest concern would be more his age and not necessarily his experience with Pep.
I think I'm not like worried. I'm more so intrigued, because I think what Vardial does, when everybody got him, when we got him, right, his thought was like, oh, he's going to be our center back, our left center back. And Pep's playing clear the whole time. I was like, no, Ake is a better defender right now, so we can let him just defend. And we saw what he did in defense last year while he was asked to go back and forth. So now it's like, hey, if he's a true left center back in the back three with him, Diaz, Walker, for example, now our attack is even better because we're playing a better player on the ball who still has to develop, right? He's missing some crosses, like that'll come in time, right? But because it's still a new thing for him, but he has the skill to do it. And so you're getting the John Stones transformation about 4 or 5 years earlier than when it started with Stones. And so now it's just like, oh, Pep is unlocking truly his ideal or prototype of a defender. You're over 6'2", you can handle the ball, you can defend 1v1, you can jump in the air. Like, you're a complete player. It's almost like we call it, you know, that 5-tool player in baseball. It's like Pep's 5-tool defender. And I feel like that's what Vardial is. He's the first, I think, young defensive project that Pep's taking on. Most of them come in 25, 26. So he gets them, you know, when they play a few years. But Vardial is the one where it's like, no, I'm going to take you from, oh, you play Leipzig, great. You play for Croatia, great. Let's go win trophies in Europe and let me show you how to do this. So this is why Pep's the GOAT, man. You go there, you get better, unless you're Calvin Phillips.
Yeah. All right, so I hold true. 40 million. 40 million, my friend. Anybody who wants to come for him, 40 million, my friend.
Hey, 20 and some, like, 20 in a good state, bro. We'll take whatever you get.
20 in pockets, huh?
Hey,
bro.
Hey,
bro. We'll give you 50.
A deal.
Give me 60 in Calvin Phillips pocket, though. Take that
deal. I like that.
All right. Well, let's move on to the shock, awe, and applause segment. And I'm not gonna. I know Crunk likes to keep this to the Premier League, but we are gentlemen of class, and we look at all of the world's football, or at least as much as it as we can. And I think that we should, you know, just be looking at everything. So, Charlie, what do you got for shock, awe, and applause for us this week?
Okay, so I'm gonna give applause and appeal, and I'm gonna give a shock, and let's call it La Liga. My applause goes to Arsenal for taking care of business for us. That win was for them, but it really was for us because now we control our fate. We have the game in hand after they were able to dominate Liverpool. Liverpool only scored on a really crappy, weird own goal, scrappy goal, like some Neil Maupay shit. And then Arsenal dominated before and after that. So credit to them taking care of business at home. They needed the win. We needed the win. A draw would have been cool, right? I laid it out on Twitter. A draw is good. The win for them was great. So thank you for that. My shock goes to a couple things. I think it's tied with La Liga and Ligue 1. That, right, those links of Kylian Mbappe agreeing to go to Real Madrid. However, obviously right after that, you get the Evening Standard saying that, oh, there's contractual issues, even though the first report said it'll cut his wages. I say this, I hope it happens only because, like, if you get him to Real Madrid, I think it stops any chatter of Haaland going to Real Madrid. And so, because you literally can't afford both of them. So anything that keeps Los Negros, is great. And we'll take Thor. Yeah. We'll take the Black Dakotas over there. We'll keep our Thor. And everybody, we'll see y'all in Champions League, semifinals and finals. Let's do it every year. Let's make it a date. Lando, what you got, man?
Man, it sounds like I'm biting you, but that's actually perfect. Except I want to add one thing. And this is actually where I wanted to go. I want to nestle that Mbappe conversation because it's going to sound like I'm a hater. I really don't want to get there right now. I think it's a shame that we're having this constant conversation with Lord Tortuga, but look, I am in shock of Chelsea Football Club. I am in thorough shock of how they think getting another manager and even a Pochettino out right now, it's mind-boggling that we can continue to go down a path of just insanity. That was a devastating loss, and I loved every bit of it, boys. I loved every bit, fucking bit of it. Oh man. But yeah, everything else was right, Charlie. I was having a hard time of coming up with some stuff. It was Black History Month, so I always want to try to shout out a potential figure or person that for me has been there. And I will say right now, I always get around this time, I miss you, Mamba. Kobe Bryant, rest in peace. This is always a time in my life that I think back to him and his greatness. Just a guy who always killed it in February. If memory doesn't do me wrong here, Kobe's infamous 61 game at the Garden was in February. So yeah, look at it, love it. Yeah, miss you, Mamba. Love
just
Kobe.
Came in today. Love Kobe. Oh, love
that's
UG.
Dope.
That's hard. That's
very dope.
That's hella hard. Yeah, that's all I got.
So for me, I'm actually going to give applause to the Irons. Up the Irons. Congratulations, West Ham women, for thoroughly defeating Arsenal at the Chigwell Construction Stadium, 2-1. Definitely helping our cause for City Women. We were level on points with Arsenal, but had the better goal differential. So that put us in true second place, even though the Athletic UK just decided that, you know, we're not part of that, whatever. But Lando, I already know how I was waiting for you to come in about the Athletic UK. I was waiting.
Right. It's a little too easy. It's a little too disrespectful. And look, here's the other thing, too, that I don't want to go out of my way. You do such a good segment when we're breaking down our ladies that I want to be respectful. Like, there are a couple times tonight to where I feel like we have to note Gareth Taylor and a little bit of growth. Like, I mean, this guy in this last match, man, for me personally, I don't know. I really don't want to get it. There's a couple thoughts I'm going to save for if we do this. When you said it personally, this for these next upcoming matches are truly season defining, and it has nothing to do with the league. Like I have to put some thoughts to the side and reserve it for what's about to happen, because if it goes down the way it does, I got some nasty, nasty words for some publications out there, because certain things are not being followed and addressed the way that it should be, in my humble opinion, as someone who's looking far from the outside in.
Not wrong. My awe, I'm going to be in awe of Atleti, even though Diego Simeone is the master of shithousing. Like, in a Madrid derby, to get the equalizing goal at the Bernabeu in stoppage time, basically the last kick of the match.
Mm-hmm.
It don't get much better than that. And I do believe that next weekend sets up for 1-2 in the table, Real Madrid, Girona. I think I might be tuned into that. That's going to be big. And my shock, AFCON is the most fun tournament of football in the world, and what Ivory Coast did in the quarterfinal match is unbelievable. Like, to go down a man and to still score, to think that they were just playing for penalties, and then to score two to win the match in front of, like, they are the home team. All of the stadiums have been, like, clad with nothing but orange, except for the Cape Verde fans, and I'll let y'all gentlemen eat that up.
Amazing country. Great place.
I don't know how their manager's gonna field 11 field players on Wednesday in the semifinal. Because they had so many players that just ended up getting suspended for yellow card accumulation, or that were, like, I think that the player that scored the winning goal was already on a yellow, ended up getting a red because he took his shirt off. But I can't, in that moment, I'm not sure that I can really blame him, because, like, emotions are running so high. I'm sure that there have been several European commentators that have said, like, oh, this is unprofessional and blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, but, like, this is AFCON, and this is something totally different. And, like, it's going to be these semifinals. First of all, Nigeria versus South Africa, regardless of who wins, the very, very online people like me win. Because regardless of who wins that match, it's going to be massive shit talking and all of the dancing and all, just I'm so excited, can't wait for it. Wednesday is going to be a cracker of two matches.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're good, gentlemen. Let's see. I know that Pep's, or excuse me, Crunk, I keep on calling him Pep. I think I've graduated him from being the Rodri of the group
to being our Pep.
He's our Pep.
So I know that Wednesday we will have a Breaking Bread for Arsenal women. We'll have some friends that you've seen before in Deep D, Emily, Megan, come on and talk to us about Arsenal Women. They also play their Conti Cup match on Wednesday, so it'll be interesting to see what their thoughts are on playing Washington Spirit UK. I mean, the London City Lionesses owned by Michelle Kang. So see how they performed. Thursday, you got us on the lit stream. Who are our guests? Because I'm very excited about the guests that we got.
Let me pull them up. Shades of Blue guest for Thursday.
Okay, we got.
You got it. Yeah.
We got the return of Reva. I'm so excited to have her back on. As she says, like, don't send me an email on the weekend. I'm not checking it till Monday. In the meantime, she's going to be over there live tweeting about Star Wars and DC comic material. That's what she's going to be doing, and watching some football in between. We have soccer jersey talk. Really excited about that. And then the homie Tyler DeLuca, who does a lot of work with the W, has actually
huge.
Yeah, yes. But like, I think he kind of got the World Cup bug. And he's decided that he's a footy fan. Unfortunately, he's a Chelsea fan. So, but that's okay. That's all right. And then
all Sunday,
Saturday. Listen, that match is at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. Usually, our pre-match is an hour before. We're only going to do a half hour before. So it's going to be 7 Eastern, 6 Central, 4 Pacific. Because it's going to be
back-to-back days, right?
Back-to-back days. Same for the women on Sunday, and that actually Sunday. Same club, Clay and Passion, and we're actually doing a watch along with some of our friends, including Deep D, Megan, and Emily, and we are very, very excited about that. I do believe that the last time that we did a watch along for the women was an Arsenal match. It was actually the Arsenal match at their place in the league, so. We might owe him one.
Run it back.
Exactly. Hey. All right. So, everybody, give the people where we can find you on the social media streets and get this hot content that we just be pushing out all the time.
I will plug at Shades of Blue. The most comprehensive podcast for your Manchester City women, Manchester City men, on this side of the Mason-Dixon and the other motherfucking side of the Mason-Dixon. Shades of Blue podcast.
Love it. Catch me on twitter.com or X app in your store at Sharpie Charlie.
And like I say, if there's a social media platform, then I participated on it. My name is TomBomb816. That's TomBomb816. Fellas, thank you so much for joining us. Ladies, gentlemen, non-binary individuals, thank you all so much for joining us. We had a great time, and you already know the vibes. Shady gang, shady gang, shady gang.
4P.